Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike Warner and Matt Thompson. Mike, how you doing?
Gentlemen, hello. Nice to talk with you after a long, not hiatus from fantasy, but just not been on a podcast in a while. I will say I'm happy it's the end of the Ryan Fitz magic era in Tampa Bay, so I'm pretty
that
excited about
that. Very long.
It did not, but at least he gave us some really strong memories after a couple of weeks. And I know there's probably no football fans that listen to this, but I just had to get that off my chest. But baseball is finally coming to a close for the regular season, but the playoffs are going to be dope. And I'm pretty excited to be on a show with you guys, get to talk a little bit of early ADPs. So I'm hyped.
Matt, how are you?
I'd be a lot better if the Cardinals could win this fucking game, but I'm good right now. Super Bears, Super Bowl, so I'm happy about that. And then,
and you got something new that's popped up. We haven't recorded an episode.
Yeah, I just got off of that. I was just recorded one.
So why don't we lead off with you telling people about your new project? Obviously, I think many people who are on Twitter or on Facebook have probably already heard about your new project or maybe even listened to my radio show. But for those who haven't, go ahead and kind of give yourself some plugs.
Yeah, it's a little venture called Prospects Live. It's me, Ralph Lifshitz from multitude of places. Jason Panini, who is a former scout with the Brewers that just got let go. As they do at their end of the season purges, Jason Waddell, who's with Prospects 1500. We got a lot of eyes on the ground in Florida. We got some eyes on the ground in Arizona, getting some looks at some of these players. We're kind of doing the scouting versus the fantasy baseball ranking, the give or take that goes into all that. We've got a lot of live videos. Lance Brodzowski also, I'm sorry, I forgot about Lance. Lance is definitely an important part over there. He does the Razzball show with Ralph, and then he's our tech guy and helped us set up all the website and gets all those cool interviews. It's a fantastic venture. It's kind of been in the works for a while. It's kind of our plan is for it to be the one stop shop for prospects, a combination of what you can get from fantasy websites and publications like Baseball America and all that stuff. So I'm excited for it. We got some T-shirts on RotoWire, so if you want to go get some, go grab some. I have a couple already. It's going to be fun, and it's something we've been working on for a while.
Well, it's a pretty awesome adventure you guys are kind of leading off with. It's a great site. Go check it out. Check out all the YouTube videos. Check out the podcast, which is
a lot of Arizona Fall League coverage right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it free?
It is free.
All free, which is the best kind of information is free information.
And I might be a little biased, but I think it's free information that you can probably it's right up there with a lot of stuff that you pay for, but it's free. Mm-hmm. So
definitely check that out. As always, you can check Matt out on Twitter at MDTompFWFB. Check Mike out on Twitter at MikeWarnerFWFB. Me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And you can catch a lot of Mike's stuff over on Baseball HQ and Fangraphs. My stuff over on Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm. And I think that's now it. And, of course, Friends of Fantasy Benefits. We're all still on Friends of Fantasy Benefits.
Oh, yeah.
We got written stuff. We've got podcasts going up all the time. Basketball and hockey are starting. Andrew Dewhurst just put out a crap ton of hockey articles. So if you're into fantasy hockey, definitely go check that out. Got a stable of guys doing fantasy football stuff. Ben Brennis, Eric Mackey doing fantasy basketball. So definitely check out all the podcasts and all the articles over at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. All right, so that's going to take care of all the business side of things. So it is that time of year again. Like Mike said, the season is starting to wind down. Playoffs are about to start. Hopefully, if you've been listening all season long to us and reading all of our work at different outlets, you have won some leagues, won some money, but we are starting to get prepped for 2019. And one of the ways we do that at this time of the year is the two early mock drafts, which we put on over this year, have been over on Fantrax. We really souped it up this year. We have 9 leagues going at the same time. Some of them are deep into the teen rounds. I think Matt said He's in about round 17. Some are moving a little bit slower and started a little bit later. But I believe at least every league is through about 80 or about 90 picks. So, or actually, it looks like through almost 100 picks. So we've got a ton of data to go through, and we're going to start. I'm just going to kind of pick some guys from each round or so of ADP and see what you guys think. And I think there is no more polarizing ADP in the first round, at least in the first 15 picks. These are 12-team leagues, but I'm going to probably treat most of it like 15-team leagues. I think that's what a lot of people play in nowadays. Ronald Acuna is going 14.8, so 15th pick overall. Ooh. On average. Has gone as early as 7th and as late as 25th. So a decent-sized gap. I think this is about right for where his ADP will be coming into draft season. I think it may even tick up a little bit. Matt, you're the prospect guy. You were huge on Acuna coming into the season. Do you think this is a fair ADP for Ronald Acuna?
Yeah, I do, especially with the disappearance of the stolen base. He's still a guy that can get you 20 stolen bases, 25 stolen base upside, maybe even 30. Remember, he missed a good chunk of the season with, he had a couple injuries this year too, and he's still, I'm trying to pull up his numbers right now, but he's still been fantastic. Still got 15 stolen bags, and 26 home runs, and he missed, what, a month and a half? And then that's not counting that he missed the first couple weeks because Atlanta was playing the games, and he's a phenomenal talent. He's everything as advertised. It's really weird that we have a prospect that's not exceeding expectations and not falling short. I feel like Acuna's hit right on the mark of what we all expected him to do. He's been fantastic.
I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, and there were some super high people. I know I was one of the lower people on him because I didn't think he'd be up as early as he was. And while
I was on the low end, I thought he'd be up where he was.
But, you know, and as much as I've taken my hits, and someone called me out on Twitter because I said on the most recent Sleeper on the Bus that, like, you know, it would have looked really, really bad if he was up on time and didn't get injured. But he wasn't up when everybody said he would be up. He came up a little bit after that, and then he got injured. But since then, since coming off the DL on June 29th, he's hitting .299, .380, .605 with 21 home runs and 13 stolen bases in just 332 plate appearances. So,
yeah,
Mike,
that's fantastic.
Is he a top 15 pick to you?
Well, if you remember a couple months ago, or maybe a month ago, you had me on the radio show, and I told you that this would happen. I told you he would go in the first round. You kind of looked or thought I was crazy at the time, but I knew this would happen. I think, you know, I'll admit it. I listened to y'all's Sleeper in the Bus a couple days ago, and you're right. about what you think is going to happen in NFBC drafts. Like, he's going to go number one a few times, for sure. And,
oh, yeah, somebody's dumb doing that.
Well, I don't even think it's necessarily dumb.
It's an upside play. It's a huge upside. I think it's stupid for him to go number one, but, like, would I, like, scoff at somebody who took him second or third? I wouldn't.
No. What I kind of did for this exercise, I went through some of like the perennial like top tier guys like Miguel Cabrera and what he did in his second season. And a lot of these players, their second year around don't show much, you know, in terms of their production, don't show a lot of diminishment. And I'm just thinking that Acuna is one of the special guys. Matt and I, you know, a couple of years ago, even we're talking about Acuna as a guy that could be a star. And, you know, over the last two seasons, he is obviously, you know, just catapulted into this level. So I don't have a problem with him going top 15. If I was doing ranks today, I would probably sit him somewhere around, you know, 10, 11. I think when I talked to you on the radio show, Justin, it was probably, I think I said 17 is where I would put him. So he's obviously notched up based on what he's done the last month or two. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not really – I wouldn't scoff at somebody, like you said, if they took him one. But I think that it's going to creep up. Like, right now you said it was about 14. I bet once we start drafting sometime in March next year, he's going to be sitting somewhere in the, like, 11, 9, 8, maybe even higher, to be honest. I honestly don't know how high it'll tick up to. But I really don't have a problem with it just because the upside is so great. As you look at his underlying metrics too, his power metrics are great. I don't love that he doesn't hit a ton of line drives. Like, for the season, he has an 18% line drive rate. I bet if I put that on a leaderboard, it wouldn't be very high. But at the same time, I think he's going to, while he might not be like a good batting average guy, you know, 289 is where he's at for the season. If he doesn't hit more line drives, he might sit like 270, 280. And some of those top tier round guys are, you know, 300-ish. But long story short, I think that he's going to end up being a first round player next year, and I don't really have a problem with it.
It's crazy what him and Soto have done. And if you compare them, like Acuna is, Soto is like the line to line hitter, gap power. Acuna's the grip and rip it, pull everything but hit bombs, and they're vastly different players. They're going to be linked for the rest of their careers, and Acuna is the more flashy player, but Soto's steady. I know that Soto's, you know, the guy that's going to probably come up because he's talked about just like Acuna.
Yeah,
but
we'll get to him in a few players for sure. For me, I'll take my lumps that I was, you know, quote unquote wrong on Acuna. Though I would like to say in my defense, I never said anything wrong about – there was anything wrong about his talent. And, right. You know, at the end of the day, I think we all knew he was a really talented player. It's a matter of when we were going to see it. That being said, the only way I'm taking Acuna in drafts next season is if I know that in the second round I can grab a really stable force. So, for me, if I'm drafting on the wheel and Acuna comes for me, I'm pairing him with – a really stable player, a Machado, an Altuve, a Yelich, a Freddie Freeman, you know, someone who is going to make, because there is always a chance that guys take step back in their sophomore years. We hear about sophomore slumps all the time. Some of the best young hitters we've seen come up have had them. Like Carlos Correa is the great example of a guy who hit the ground running in his first sample, but then really struggled in his first full season in the majors. So I think if you think that the Acuna floor is safe, you're fooling yourself. I mean, he definitely has a ton of room to drop, especially in the average department. I don't think I trust him as like a 300 hitter. I think he's more of a 275 type guy next season. But there's also a huge upside, and I think in spite of the fact that he's hit for a lot more power than I thought he would early on in his career, I think there's more speed in the game that we could see, and this is a guy who has legit 25-25 or 30-30 potential next season. Yeah. There's also just a not-so-safe floor, so if you're going to take him in the first round, you got to pair him with someone who's safe. Let's talk about another guy who is kind of flirting with that first round number, and I want to see what you guys think. Is Christian Yelich a first rounder to you, Mike?
I thought you were going to talk about Javier Baez, because I'm just sitting here looking at Javier Baez. Like,
oh, we'll get to that next.
Yeah, I'm just like diving in while you guys are talking. But Yelich, I will say I was wrong on him coming into this year. You know, while I thought that Miller Park would help him, I certainly didn't think it would equate to 32 home runs and counting, more than likely. I think he's safe. And you know, your argument about taking Acuna and maybe Yelich at the wheel is not an issue for me. Obviously, a strong batting average floor, but he still has a very high ground ball rate. The fly ball rate went down. I mean, his power metrics spiked up, and his home run to fly ball rate, while it's always been relatively
33%.
High, yeah, it's at 33% this year. But I do love the offense. I just do. 108 runs scored. I didn't necessarily think that he was going to mimic that from Miami in 2017, but he did. And I still like the Brewers lineup heading into next year as well. So, I mean, pretty safe in runs. Probably he's not going to have 96 RBI more than likely, but he could. Pretty safe. I mean, just a 5-category contributor across the board, and I think home runs go down. So while I don't think he should be taken right now, he's been taken on average where like what, 17. I don't think he should be taken there. I probably will have him ranked in the top 25, so that's not a big gap. So I guess I'm gonna say yeah, like I'm fine with taking him up there, but I will probably not have a lot of shares because he has the potential to go up as the draft season goes on as well. And I've always loved Yelich, but I've never really looked at him as a player that is a top 3-round guy. And I think just people are a little bit too high on him compared to the way I view him.
Matt, where are you at on Christian Yelich?
I posed the question today in our chat is if Yelich is a top 8 pick. I mean, because he's been that good. I don't think I would take him there. I think he's going to be a little bit of regression's coming here, but even a little bit of regression's fine. He's a true five category stud that we don't have right now in this fantasy game. Those players are disappearing by the wayside a little bit. But he's also worth noting that if you're going to spend that big on Yelich, is it a fair strategy to grab someone else and then grab like Benintendi on the way back? Because that's what I did in my mock, and I'm pretty happy with my Arenado Benintendi group there.
Trio.
Yeah, but he's gonna regress. Obviously, I think that's everyone's agreement there. But it won't be even if he regresses back to the 2017 or even 2016 body of work, he's still a top 25 player.
Well, so. Do you think he hits 322 again?
No, but I wouldn't project anybody to hit 322.
Okay. You know, I think the stolen bases are probably close. Milwaukee has been in the top five in stolen base attempts per game for the last.
You think he hits 32 homers again?
No, I would put the percentage chance on that at like 15%, maybe.
Is he more likely to hit 322 or more likely to hit 32 homers?
Probably 322, I would bet.
Agreed.
How many homers has he hit at home? I'm going to look it up. But I bet he's hit a fair amount of those homers at home.
I believe he hit 18 at home, I believe. Okay, that's not too bad. Or actually, maybe 19, I believe, is what it is. For me, there's obviously going to be some regression, but I think the floor is so safe.
Yeah, the floor is ridiculous.
That he's like a great guy to take at the end of the first round, beginning of the second. Like I said, he's a great guy that I would pair with Ronald Acuna if both of those guys fell to me on the wheel in a 15-team league. So I don't have really a lot of qualms about him. I do believe that like the power is gonna take a tick back. Like the home run to fly ball, like you guys were mentioning, is insane. The fact that he actually regressed in fly ball percentage down to 2 percentage points to 23%. He has a 23% fly ball percentage, and he's still got over 50%.
And one third of them are leaving the park.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So. I think there's going to be some obvious regression in the power, but I think even if he hits 25 home runs and steals 20 bases and hits 300, I mean that's still borderline first round talent. And the safety, because the next guy we're going to talk about does not have this level of safety, and that's the aforementioned Javier Baez. And Baez has had an MVP caliber season, and I'm sure he will get votes for the MVP in the National League. But Mike, you seem to be ready to jump on this one, so I'll let you go first. What are your thoughts on Javier Baez going as early as he is? Currently, his ADP is 21.2. He went as early as 10th overall in one of the drafts, and as late as 27th. So, Mike, give me your thoughts on Baez.
Let me start by saying, I love Javier Baez, and I always have. He's one of my favorite players in baseball. He's entertaining as shit to watch. With that said, prior to the season starting, I wasn't very high on him, and I obviously was wrong there. I promise I'm not wrong about everything.
I'm going to be wrong on this one, too, because I got in an argument with Rick Wolf about him earlier in the season, or before the end of the season, because I was down on him.
But, you know, you look at his outside the zone swing percentage, 46% is a career high, whichever way you want to look at it. That tells me, he's going to keep chasing. And his walk rate this season is 4%. So while his strikeout percentage is at 27% for the year, I just don't think his plate skills are good enough, especially to hit 293. But, you know, maybe to hit 273 like he did, in 2016 and 17 combined. And when you're making less contact, you're obviously going to have less chances to hit home runs. Now, I will say the one saving grace about his home run to fly ball rate, which has increased each of the last three seasons, is that it's increased each of the last three seasons. So maybe he is finding a way to really just kind of hone in on the pitch selection itself, even though he is still just swinging everything.
It's gone up 13.5% since 2016, though.
It has. And his power metrics have gone up each season as well. The thing is, as a prospect, he's always been somebody just oozing power and has skills in almost every facet of the game. So maybe as he's getting older, next year he's going to be in his age 26 season. season. He's still very young, so I understand why he's going as high as he is. But for me, I don't like to take, especially top three round picks, on guys that have literally zero plate skills. And he is one of those guys that just does not know how to control the strike zone, which it can lead to a lot of volatility in numbers from year to year. While it's gone up each of the last couple of seasons, I just do not see him putting up this type of a season again next year. And his stolen base opportunities have just skyrocketed as well. Can we really bank on him once again stealing 21 bases when his career high coming into the season was 12? So, I mean, just projecting him out into a full season next year, I'm probably going to have him somewhere in the vicinity of like 24 home runs, 13 stolen bases, 275 average, and like, you know, 90 runs in RBIs. And that's going to make him a really good player, but definitely not a top 20-ish guy. And I mean, I just don't get it. That's why I've been digging into his StatCast stuff. And it's the same as what I just said. I mean, his stuff's been going up the last couple of years in terms of his power metrics and such. But can you really believe a guy? It's almost like Mark Trumbo with plate skills. Like, he just is not able
to. That's a really good comparison. Yeah.
Go ahead, man.
In your fantasy tagging league, he's got to be a first-round pick. But
I shouldn't even laugh at that. I really shouldn't.
Hey, I have good ones every now and then. But this is the Matt Thompson blood bank guarantee. This is Javier Baez's best offensive season he's ever going to have. The play skills, like Mike said, just no chance you can bank on anything from this guy. The floor is literally 2016, where he got demoted to the minor leagues because the play skills were terrible. Obviously, I'm not saying that's going to happen again, but it's not totally without the realm of possibility. The stolen base opportunities, again, I agree with you. I think they're a bit fluky. His home run per fly ball ratio is also a Christian Yelich in 26%. So that's coming down. It's extremely volatile to be taken in the top 25, in my opinion, and I could never do it. I would take him probably in the fifth or sixth round, which means I'll never get him.
Yeah, I think I'd take him in the late third, early fourth, but that still means I'm not going to get him. I'm with you guys.
I'll take Trevor Story.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that one, especially if the elbow issue turns out to be nothing it appears it might. So, in spite of the fact that he's made improved contact this year, it's still his contact percentage is still under 70%. Like Mike mentioned, he has a 46.30 swing percentage. He's just swinging at everything.
Why do you throw him a strike? I don't understand it.
I mean, I don't know why people throw him a strike. It doesn't really matter if they throw him a strike or not because, like I said, he's swinging out of the zone 50% of the time anyways and making contact 55% of the time outside of the zone. I think the volatility is not something I necessarily want in the second round for me. And like I said, I think the floor isn't super safe. I worry that, like Matt said, this is the best season we're going to get from him, and there's no way that he can maintain a 25% strikeout rate doing what he does.
Are you even selling in a dynasty league?
I would totally sell in a dynasty league because I think you'll get a mint for him. I think someone who's buying in a dynasty league is looking at a guy who's 25, going to be 26 next year, and going, this is just the start of the breakout. And to me, this reminds me too much of peak Carlos Gomez.
Well, that's a good name.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. You know, Gomez always walks like an exceptional amount.
He walked decently, but I mean, he never had
same double, type of player. He
never
aggressive.
Had a double digit
right.
walk rate.
Did Gomez walk a lot? I'm trying
no,
to remember.
No, he didn't. He had a couple seasons where he walked 6 or 7% of the time. So he wasn't like necessarily walking like 2 or 3% of the time. But he was a guy who put together a few seasons of decent averages with a ton of power and speed, and then all of a sudden the bottom fell out.
One more quick thing too here with Baez, this might be, or I'm saying next season might be his last year with all that positional eligibility. With the Addison Russell stuff, I think Baez might be the shortstop long term there. So I'm not sure. He probably will still probably get either second or third, but I think the days of him with the tri eligibility are going to be over.
Well, going into next year, though, it doesn't matter. Like, he's getting all of that going into next season.
He's talking about in a dynasty league. I think if it wasn't for Chris Bryant's injuries this year, he probably wouldn't have even gotten to the 20 games at third base. So, I mean, more than likely, he probably still, you know, continue to get second and shortstop eligibility, especially because don't they have a – I believe they have a shortstop at the higher level of their minors.
No. Nope.
Oh, do they not have – isn't – what's his name?
Nico Horner, Robert Sadaman.
Yeah, that's
David. David Bodie.
So, well, maybe not. So, but yeah, with the whole Addison Russell thing, who knows what's going to happen long term with the Cubs and their positioning. So, let's go ahead and move on and talk about the next guy. It's the aforementioned Juan Soto. He's going 30th overall, 30.2 according to ADP of our two early mock drafts. Has gone as early as 22nd and as late as 36th. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Juan Soto going as a borderline back end of the second round, early third round in a 15-team league?
I think in a standard 5x5, that's crazy. But in a 5x5 with OBP, he's definitely worth the pick. You're looking at Soto's 405 OBP. That is 15.8% walk rate. That's Joey Votto.
Vahotian?
Whatever. You know what I mean? He's up into that kind of – he's not Joey Votto, but that he's in that conversation. The walk rate is fantastic for a 19, 20-year-old kid. For a 19-year-old, he'll be 20 next month. The walk rate is absurd. He used his off-fields like I touched on earlier. He's not the flashiest guy like Acuna is, but he's a steady Eddie kind of guy that gets it done. I'm not taking him that high, though, because I think someone else is always going to be higher on him than me going into next season. Over the long term, I saw you had him in a dynasty league, Justin. I don't think there's any reason for you to sell him. But in a redraft league, someone's going to beat me to it. I'm just looking at the ADP around him. Starling Marte, Chris Davis. I guess it depends on your team construct, but I could probably tell you I want Davis over Soto. But you know, that, I guess that's a pick-your-flavor kind of thing. Someone's always going to beat me to Soto, and that's fine. But the OBP, in an OBP league, he's 100% worth that draft pick.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Soto?
You know, I get that argument of him being worth that in an on-base percentage format. The thing I'm worried about with Soto is, you know, I get, like, just hints of Nomar Mazara here. And it's not in a bad way, even. It's just, Nomar Mazara.
Mazara can't hit lefties. That's the problem.
Yeah, and it's not – first off, Juan Soto is a pure hitter. Mm-hmm. Like, he's one of the best hitters that I've seen come out of the minor leagues in a long time in terms of just pure plate skills and swing itself. I'm very impressed by what I've seen out of Juan Soto. What I worry about in terms of, like, the Nomar Mazara comp is I feel like this is kind of what he is, like what his – plate skills are now and what he's demonstrated in this little amount of time in the major leagues now is probably close to what we're going to see long term. I don't see that there's going to be a lot more ceiling here. Can he be a 30 home run hitter? I think so. You know, he's hit 20 in about 400 at bats this year, but things I'm worried about, you know, 58% ground ball rate since July. You know, the line drive rate has went down in that time as well. The power metrics have dipped insanely a lot since that time. And, you know, the home run to fly ball rate, similar to Christian Yelich, is kind of keeping him afloat there. 24% for the season, 24% in the second half as well. I just, when you look at a full season of Juan Soto, I think year two is going to be kind of really open my eyes as to what we might see long term with him. Because, you know, coming into the year, people really didn't know what to expect. But, you know, I think it's fairly certain to say that he's not going to steal a ton of bases. Like, he has five right now, I think,
because he had three in one game.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the things that are certain with Soto are what Matt mentioned, the walk rate. His plate skills are phenomenal, out of this world. And his swing / hit tool are out of this world as well. Going to be playing in a pretty good lineup. So, you know, I think that there's a lot to like with Soto as far as being a top, you know, a top 30 pick. I think that's pretty outrageous to me. Especially the Starling Marte going behind him. Like, Starling Marte just has no business going behind Juan Soto right now. There's a ton of aces going behind him. I wouldn't take Chris Davis ahead of Juan Soto, but Anthony Rizzo, I would. Ozzie Albies, I would. Just guys that can offer about the same amount in home runs and offer me more speed. And with batting average not being a big thing, I know you like to punt batting average, Justin. I'm very similar in that aspect. I need to see a second year of Juan Soto. And this isn't a knock against him either. It's going to make it sound like I'm negative on him, but I love the guy to death. I just think for fantasy, top 30 is kind of overblowing things a bit.
I think it might be a little rich for me, but I don't necessarily have a problem with him going in the top 30. I actually thought, and I do think that there's still a chance that he will actually go higher as the draft season goes on, and that will put me out. But I don't have a problem necessarily with the price, because I think, unlike Acuna, he has a really safe floor. I think the natural hit tool will keep him around 290, 300, no matter what. And I think he's always going to show power, and he shows a ton of patience at the plate. The question becomes for me, because he's not going to steal, he has to really produce those power numbers to give back the value and hit for high average, which, like I said, I believe that he will. So the question is, do I think this guy is a 35 home run bat? That I don't know if he is going to be able to produce that in a full season. You know, guys go through slumps. Guys, you know, he's a guy who sprays the ball a lot, so he may not get some of those home runs that maybe Acuna does, because Acuna pulls the ball so much. I'm kind of tempering my love for where he's going. I don't have necessarily a problem with it, but I think the price is going to rise, and that will put me out. You know, the one thing I do love is here are his monthly splits for his OBP over the course of his 2018 season. In May, he had a 419 on base percentage, June 440, July 398, August 402, September 371. Dude is going to get on base, and that will keep him in the lineup no matter what. And keep him valuable in fantasy no matter what. So I love the floor. I just don't know if he's got a super high ceiling that I want to invest a second round pick in.
People forget, though, he did battle some serious injury concerns. Mm-hmm. So that has to be factored in. I mean, yeah, they're probably fluky. It was a fractured, I can't remember which ankle, but he broke an ankle. Mm-hmm. He had a hamate surgery. And I think he had a groin or a hamstring strain that kind of, he only played 32 games last year.
Yeah.
But I mean, so,
Acuna has the same issues. I mean, he's battled injuries too.
Definitely.
And they were this year. So, like, we're not going to discount him because of the time he missed. Like, I don't know that we can necessarily discount Soto much with the injuries and time he's missed, because it hasn't happened this year.
This is true.
All right, let's move on and talk about. I'm going to throw a handful of guys at you, because they're all going kind of right in a row. They're going 25.3, 26.3, and 28.1. These are three guys that have been first-round picks the last few years, no longer going there. That's Charlie Blackmon, Chris Bryant, and Carlos Correa. Matt, I'll start with you. Do these guys deserve to be going a little bit higher, or are they actually overrated considering where they're going?
Well, can I go case by case?
Of course.
I mean, I think Blackmon is a steal at where he's going. I think Chris Bryant is a potential steal where he's going, and I wouldn't touch Correa at his ADP. I'm probably way different than all of you. I still think Blackmon.
I'm actually right in line with you.
I still think Blackmon in Coors Field is fantastic. Chris Bryant, I still think, has 50 home run potential. I love Chris Bryant's plate skills. I thought he was going to strike out way more than he is in the majors, but it's actually going the opposite way. He's had some fluky injuries this year. And Correa has had some injuries this year and is also not as – he's not in the same conversation as a hitter as these other two guys, in my opinion. And Correa doesn't offer anything on the bases. Chris Bryant can at least give you dual eligibility, and Blackman's a fantastic MVP candidate if everything breaks right for him in Coors. So – I'm not touching Correa, but I'm very much in on Blackmon and Bryant.
Mike, what are your thoughts on these guys?
Well, I actually took Bryant and Correa in my draft. So I started off with Trout, Bryant, Correa in the top three.
See, that's great.
And that's, And it's kind of funny because I've never been a Correa guy. So I, you know, I was kind of using this as, you know, some fun as well. But as far as Bryant goes, I ditto everything that Matt said. I think that Bryant has the capability to be a first rounder slash 50 home run hitter as soon as next season. I don't know what kind of bad luck is kind of spewing with him, but I think he's a first round talent. And, you know, it sucks that he hasn't really been able to put it together the last couple of years. And with that said, I think that his draft cost, if it remains where it is now, is kind of fair based on the risk. But at the same time, I think that the upside warrants taking him where he's going. As far as Blackman goes, I guess tell me if I'm mistaken, but he's a free agent this year, right?
No, he signed a long-term deal in the offseason.
Signed an extension.
Oh, did he? Okay, I completely forgot about that. So with that said, yes, he is an absolute steal where he's going. Because, if you know, obviously big splits if you leave Coors Field. Even Blackman, though, doesn't have like stark splits between Coors Field and away. So yeah, I don't know why Blackman would be going as low as he has. I, you know, understand that his production wasn't quite as plentiful as it's been in years past, but I think Blackman's a stud. He should be going there. As far as Correa goes, I think that there is an opportunity for him to get back to what he was in 2016 in terms of like stolen bases. Now, like, Houston has not run this year especially, but as the years go on, they're going to need to start manufacturing runs. They're not going to be able to just count on all this timely hitting all the time. And I think that part of that will be using some of their athletes for more speed. Mind you, Kyle Tucker will be coming, and they'll be able to use him for some speed as well. But with Correa, taking him in the third round is a guy that, you know, I don't really love that much, but at the same time can deliver that type of value. So I don't have a strong take either way with Correa. It's not really like I'm putting my stamp on of approval on him. Like, I think that you need to be taking him there because there is some obvious downside, but he is a really consistent hitter and somebody that's going to always be in a pretty like potent lineup. And I just don't really see a reason not to, you know, target somebody like that in the third round. So, you know, I'm fine with all three of them.
Okay. I mean, I'm fine. I'm actually in agreement with Matt. And I think you, Mike, on the first two guys, on Bryant and Blackman. I think what people are afraid of with Blackman especially is the lack of running. You know, all of a sudden he went from a guy who was, you know, stole 28 bases in 2014, stole 43 bases in 2015, and the last three seasons 17, 14, and so far 12 this year. You know, so most likely he's not going to surpass his numbers last year. And, you know, and then of course the average dropped. Well, the BABIP dropped. I think the BABIP will increase being in Coors. I don't have a problem with the power dropping a little bit. I think this guy is going to be a steal. He still scored 111 runs on a Rockies offense that really struggled. So I think he is kind of a steal, kind of in the back end of the second round in a 15-team league. Bryant, I think if he's healthy, he'll be fine next year. So, you know, as long as the reports coming into camp camp next year that he's fine, I have no issues with him. I have a ton of issues with Carlos Correa going where he's going. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I was down on him coming into the season because dude doesn't run anymore. Like,
no.
Like, that's the thing. Like, he isn't a special player if he doesn't run, and now you've got to throw on the injury risk that goes along with it. This is a guy who hasn't played in more than 110 games in the last two seasons. You know, he may do that this year, but just barely. But he's also been dealing with back soreness. So, like, he may not do it because the Astros have everything wrapped up. They have no reason to keep running him out there. So, two straight seasons where he's getting less than 110 games and doesn't steal anymore. Didn't even hit for average this year because of all the nagging injuries. I don't understand how people can invest a second or a third round pick in this guy. It just seems insane. They're betting on the return to what we saw in 2016 plus growth. I think that's foolish, and I can't imagine having any shares of Carlos Correa in any league.
Well, the pro argument, I mean, again, I'm not really strong. I don't have a strong take for Correa, but the pro argument is he's going to be 24 next year, mm-hmm. and his ADP has went down each of the last couple of years, kind of echoing what has happened to his actual value. You know, last year he was a top 15 pick. In drafts now, he's what, a top 30-ish pick? Was he going in front of, yeah, slightly in front of, like, Juan Soto?
He was going in the first round this year. Like,
Yep.
Back into the first round, beginning of the second.
Number 15. He's going about 15 is ADP.
I got shit when I said Francisco Lindor should be going ahead of Carlos Correa.
No, and I was with you, by the way, prior to the season starting. I was with you. As far as Correa goes, I think it's a bit premature to say that he can't resurrect some of this stuff that he had at the beginning of his career. The Astros the last 2 years have been just flat out dominant in their division. I'm not saying that his injuries aren't serious and that they're not something that he would have been sidelined with anyways, but I just feel like if they were in a little bit more of a battle, that he would have been out there more or been pushing it faster to try and get back out there. Again, with the Astros too, like it's even with like George Springer, I've been down on him in the past because I feel like, you know, he's a power only guy that's in a good lineup. So he's going to score some runs, but you can't really bank on, you know, his skill set long term. I kind of feel the same way with Correa. And again, this isn't like a pro argument for him, but it's just if you're looking at things kind of in a different light, I think Correa has the opportunity being so young that he can kind of recoup some of that value. Now, will he ever steal double digit bases again? Maybe not. But at the same time, if you just look at simply, he's in a great lineup. He's a good hitter when he's on the field. And if he can come into next season right, I feel like third round is a decent cost. But again, like I just don't, you know, I'm not trying to give it a strong argument because I don't love him that much.
he's attempted 3 stolen bases in 106 games this year.
Because he's been hurt.
I mean, still, like he attempted last year. He attempted 3 stolen bases in 109 games.
Like he was hurt.
He's 6. Well, but like you can't give him credit for like because he's always hurt.
Sure, but at the same,
he's missed a third of the season each of the last 2 years.
But they haven't needed to really get him back on the field in a fast manner.
What makes you think that's going to change next year?
I wouldn't be surprised if
Athletics are a lot better and Angels might. You know,
they're going to be better too. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if they move Bregman to short next year.
No, I mean, we'll see. And, you know, if you talk to me 3 months from now, I might be like, you know what? Third round for Carlos Correa is fucking high. You need to be taking him in like the 9th. Who knows? But like, you know, Correa's just, I think he's too young to be saying, just being that negative on him. We'll see what happens. But his ADP has gone down the last couple of years because of, I mean, he was like a top 6 pick after his rookie year. He was a top 10 or 15 pick last year. I bet he's going to be settling in. I bet as the offseason goes on, more people are going to kind of echo your sentiment, Justin, where, you know, maybe he starts falling to like the 40th, 50th pick. And that's probably more apt, to be honest. But at the same time, I think it's a bit premature to say that he can't recoup some of that value from a couple of years ago.
All right, let's move on. Talk about the next guy. This is an interesting one because I've heard some. You know, we talked about this ADP a couple times already on the Sleeper and the Bust. I've heard the RotoWire podcast talk about it a couple times. And some other podcasts out there talking about this ADP, but no one's talked about the fact that Noah Syndergaard is still going in the top 50 overall, 43rd overall. Mike, what are your thoughts on Syndergaard going as a top 50 pick?
Strong pass. That's how I feel about it. I honestly haven't owned Thor ever. I've just never owned him. And, you know, he's 2 years removed from over 200 innings. So I guess we can kind of feel a little bit better about, you know, possibly him being healthy going into this year. But at the same time, we can't. Like, this is 2 straight seasons where he's dealt with nagging injuries. I just think that this is going to be a problem with him as time goes on. You know, as far as starting pitcher ranks, do you know where that is starting pitcher ranks wise, or do you just have the ADP?
I just have the ADP, but I could probably figure it out pretty quickly.
Like, I would probably not have him in my top 30 starters. I probably would have him outside of that. And based on where he's going at ADP, I would say that he is firmly inside the top 25, maybe top 20.
12. He's 12.
He's 12? Yeah, 12. Yeah. So That tells you all I need to say. His skills are pretty sound. I'm not going to go against his skills. Still has a good ground ball rate. Still has although his strikeout rate has dropped each of the last 2 seasons. I will say that. And his walks went up a fair amount this year as well. Not due to anything with the first pitch strike rate or anything, but I do think that injuries are going to start playing. They're going to start dipping into his skills a bit. And he's just not good enough to sidelined for 2 months of the season, you know, even if you want to take out, we'll say, 10 starts going into next year, he's going to have to put up like less than a 3 ERA or maybe even less than like a 2.8 ERA with stronger strikeout numbers than 9.3 per nine for us to want to take him in the top 40. And I think that that's absolutely ridiculous. If I was taking him now, I would put him outside my top 30 starters, and I would probably put him in what, the top 70, top 60,
yeah,
somewhere there. So
you'll never get him if that's the case. So Matt,
which is why I've never owned him.
Matt, where are you at on Thor?
I'm going to echo a lot of what Mike said. I know the ADP for like Snell and Garrett Cole and Bauer is all just a tiny bit higher than Syndergaard, but I don't see how you can take Syndergaard over any of them, which in half the leagues is happening. And then Carlos Carrasco is behind Syndergaard. I'd much rather have Carrasco. Zach Greinke, I'll take Greinke. Strasburg over Syndergaard. I just don't see it. Yeah, I would. I'm on the Strasburg train this year. I actually think he's a decent buy, but Syndergaard, no, man. I would bet on Walker Buehler pitching more innings than Syndergaard, and I would love Buehler. So you can get him way later.
I love Buehler too, but. And I'm okay with that bet as well. But I'm with you guys. I don't think I'm as low as Mike is on Syndergaard, but like I don't understand how people can take him in the top 50 picks, in the top 15 starting pitchers, considering that.
Would you
go ahead?
Yeah. Would you take him as like your starting pitcher? Well, I mean, I know it's draft context, but if he was your number two, is there any ace you could pair him with that you feel comfortable? Scherzer?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if a Scherzer, Syndergaard,
you're in the hole on offense though, but I mean,
yeah, why would you do that? Like, there's no reason for you to go pitcher like that in the first couple rounds.
I mean, right? That's in terms.
Right,
of,
I agree, but
there's no way you could feasibly. I don't think you could feasibly do that considering where he's going. But right. I don't think. Yeah, I don't think I'll have any shares. I think for me, I'd feel much more confident with him going outside, in like the David Price area, 75.
David Price going 75 is kind of absurd too, I think.
That is as low as I said.
So yeah, I mean, but I mean that puts him probably in like the top, just outside the top, it's probably in the top 20 starters. So starting pitching did not go as early and as often as I thought it would, and I think it will get
Jack Flaherty
up
or Noah Syndergaard. Flaherty's ranked 78th.
I think
Mike Clevenger's 80. I mean,
I'm taking him over Clevenger, and I'm taking him over Flaherty.
In terms of actual ranks, yes, but based on ADP, I'm taking Flaherty.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Oh, yes, 100%.
Yeah, in terms of where they're going in, in ADP, I'm saying like where I would rank him. Like I still think the upside is great with Syndergaard. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like we have seen, I think injuries take a toll out on his skills, but I mean he is only two seasons removed from the 183 and two thirds with a 2.6 ERA and a 29% strikeout rate. So I mean like the skills are great if he's healthy. I just don't know if we're going to see a season of him ever get to 180 again. So that to me, and I would not be willing to bank on that for next season.
Well, where are we projecting innings wise for next year? Because if we project one, it was kind of like the Ohtani argument coming into the year.
155.
Yeah, 155. So he probably is a top 25 starter then.
Yes. Maybe
even higher. Honestly, I mean, his skills are still strong. If he doesn't have a like really bad injury to his arm, I mean, you could end up seeing him slip into the top 20, maybe even top 15 if things really played right. But
still,
you know,
12th overall. That seemed or 12th out of starting pitchers. Seems a bit insane. Like I can make the argument for Thor over Bauer. Bauer's finishing the season with an injury. He has a history of being inconsistent and tinkering, but I can't make the argument for Thor over Snell, Thor over Cole, Thor over Verlander, Thor over Severino, and you know, moving down, even Thor over Carrasco seems a bit insane to me. Thor over Greinke seems bit insane. Thor over Paxton seems a bit insane to me, even with Paxton's injury issues. So I think
that's probably the breaking point. Paxton, like right at that range right there, which is top 60, I think that that's like the perfect kind of spot that he should be at.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like whichever one you want. Patrick Corbin being up there is absolutely insane, but whatever.
Well, especially considering we have no idea where Patrick Corbin's going to be pitching next year.
Agreed.
But odds are, if he goes anywhere, it's better than where he's at.
Not if he ends up in New York.
Is that
true? That.
Yeah.
So, or Boston for that matter.
God.
Corbin's always going to scare me. Let's move on and talk about Joey Votto, because Joey Votto has been a perennial first round pick, usually towards the back end, but a guy that seems to be safe every year. This year, not so much. He's really disappointed, and the ADP has really dropped him quite a bit, going outside the top 45, 45.9. He's gone as early as 30th overall and as late as 63rd. So, Mike, where are you at on Joey Votto?
I am just salivating at this cost because, I know you said in the sleeper in the bus, Justin, but I'm probably going to have every share of Joey, or you and I are going to be fighting over Votto in every draft because, this is another just polished hitter that had a down year. And I understand the 12 home runs from first base, like Paul mentioned, it really crushed you this season. So you more than likely had a significant loss on your team based on Votto this year. But at the same time, he came back in September thus far. He's hit 290, he had three home runs in that time. His walk rate is still just through the freaking roof. He still is hitting a pretty decent amount of fly balls. It's not as much as other power hitters, but he's never been a prototypical power hitter. The 36 bombs that he hit in 2017 came with the highest fly ball rate that he's had since 2009. So it was reasonable to expect him to drop off in power a little bit this year, obviously not to 12, but there's nothing in Votto's profile that tells me that he can't hit over 25, 27 bombs next year like he did the three prior years coming into 2018. So in a nutshell, no, I think people that are taking him outside of maybe the top 30 are insane. And even then, I don't feel great about it. Like if I'm sitting there at the end the beginning of the second round, I'm feeling bad that I'm not going to be able to get Joey Votto on the way back. Based on draft costs now, I might be able to, but I know as the draft season kind of comes around that Votto is going to end up, he has to end up kind of moving up a little bit. If he doesn't, then I don't know what's going on. But in a nutshell, I love Votto, especially based on where he's going. And I still think he has a pretty good amount left in the tank. He's still only going to be in his age 35 season next year. And I mean, he's just not ancient. He's not going to be one of these power hitters that just completely go by the wayside. His plate skills are too good. And he's just, his hit tool's too good. So yeah, I love him.
All right, Matt, what are your thoughts on Votto?
Yeah, I'm right there, man. I don't want to say the floor because we don't know what that is, but
I think this is the floor.
I say this is the floor, yes.
Is it? Okay, well, I mean, the floor is getting hurt with him because he's going to be 35 next year. But this, if you lost your league with Votto, yeah, the 12 home runs killed you, but 284 batting average nowadays is what, 300 a couple years ago? I mean, I know that's a dumb thing to say, but the batting average is still a strong asset. The OBP is still a strong asset. If he plays, he's going to contribute across the board. I have to take Votto. He's been one of my favorite players just because of the skill set, the play skills. We talk about play skills so much on this show, especially me and Mike. And if we're not going to be in Votto's corner now, then what are we to talk about play skills? So sign me up for Joey Votto. You guys will probably get him before me, though, but I think I'm a smidge underneath you.
Yeah, I'm going to have a ton of shares of Joey Votto next year. I mean, in spite of the fact that he missed time, the hard contact percentage was actually up in the time he played this year. He still has an elite 17.4% walk rate, only striking out 16% of the time. Like, yes, are we going to see the MVP caliber numbers we saw last year? No. But the one thing you can kind of bank on is, I think, a return to a 300 average next year, 100 runs, 100 RBIs, and over 20 home runs. And I think that the average and the counting stats that come with it, even if the power isn't 30 or 30 plus, is so bankable and it's just so safe. And first base is so atrocious.
It's dead.
It's such a ugly position, and that can change, and it, you know, it's fluctuated back and forth. Last year we thought it was ugly coming into the season, and then it was deep. This year we thought it was deep coming into the season, and then it's been ugly. So, like, who knows what it'll be, but at the end of the day, Votto is just one of those guys you can kind of set it and forget it, and as long as he's healthy, he'll be fine. I think the injuries derailed him this year. I think he'll be fine coming into next season. I want a ton of shares of Joey Votto, and next year will be that year, because there's, for me, like, the idea that Juan Soto is going 30th overall and Joey Votto is going 45th, I would easily flip-flop those guys.
Like, yep, I'm with you there. Yes.
So, yeah. Like there's no rationale that Votto should be going after Springer, should be going after Bellinger. It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. So, I'm like I said, I'm going to have a ton of shares of Votto. A guy that I don't think I will have a ton of shares of coming into next year, even though I'm going to reach in a draft, you know, and by say reach, I mean reach for me in a draft, is Vlad Guerrero Jr. Because Vlad Guerrero Jr. currently is going as the 50.7th in average draft position, 50th overall player. I think it's a little bit insane considering, again, we don't know when he's going to be up, but I think he has the potential to give first-round value. So I'll make the reach in a league. He's gone as early as the 23rd player overall, as late as 75th. So this is going to be super polarizing. Matt, you're the prospect guy. Where are you taking Vlad Guerrero Jr.?
Inside the top 50. Not thinking twice. I think he's going to be up. I think he's going to be up, you know, second week of April. And the dude has Miguel Cabrera, Albert Pujols upside, and it's going to happen immediately. I'm all in on Vladimir Guerrero. The only thing he does not have is a stolen base component that Acuna has, but he's a better hitter. He's going to be an asset in any league. He's a potential top 5 third baseman going into next year. Or not? Well, he has potential to be a top 5 third baseman next season at only 19. So yeah, give me Vlad all day. And if I'm in a league with you, you're not getting him.
I figured that much. Mike, am I getting him in if I'm in a league with you?
Yeah, you know, and you talked about Miggy and Albert Pujols' rookie years, Matt. Well, Miggy in his rookie year hit 264 with 12 home runs. Mind you, it was in less than 400 at-bats. But Albert Pujols, you know, this is best-case scenario, in my opinion, for Vlad Guerrero Jr. And if this happens, then, okay, he's worth the top 50 pick. But Albert Pujols' rookie year in 2002, 314 batting average, 394 on-base percentage, 561 slug, 955 Perfect. OPS. 34 home runs, 127 RBIs, and 118 runs scored. By far the best case scenario for Vlad Jr., which kind of turns us to our next question, right, in terms of like how the lineup is going to be in Toronto. And for runs per game this year, Toronto was 17th. That was also with Josh Donaldson played the first half with them, right? Or barely played, I guess.
Oh.
You know, how much different is the lineup going to be this next year compared to what they've already had? You know, maybe they end up being about league average. But regardless, I'm pretty sure those Cardinals teams had some pretty decent offenses back in that time. I'm not positive. Yeah. I would have to look it up. But
Scott Rowland, Edmonds, McGuire.
Yeah, pretty strong.
Yeah.
Either way, you know, my main argument here is I'm not going to take a rookie in the top 50. And that's not because I don't believe in Vlad Guerrero Jr. And I hate this because Acuna and Vlad Jr., I have loved almost, and Soto for that matter, I've loved almost more than my children in the last couple of years. And, you know, I have jerseys of every single one of them. I sit here and I just kind of like bathe in their awesomeness. But then in fantasy, you know, if I don't have them in a dynasty league, which fortunately I do, I have all three of them in some form or capacity somewhere, I can't root for them because it's just too rich for me to take. So in the top 50, like you are counting on Vlad Guerrero Jr. to end up putting up a 30 plus home run season with 90 runs, 90 RBIs. And I just don't like putting my faith in major league systems to not kind of mess with a player.
Yeah.
And I think that could happen here. And, you know, mind you, these are marginal arguments. If we're just looking at it from a pure if I knew for a fact 100% he was going to be with the Blue Jays on April 10th and he was going to play all season long, then, you know, I probably would be more inclined to take him in the top 50. But it's the same. I was with Justin in that argument to not take Acuna this last year. And I'll admit that because I didn't know what would happen. And he even did get injured a little bit. He struggled at AAA. He also got injured. And still, despite that, the talent one out. But I don't think we can be so just have such great recency bias that we assume that, you know, somebody like Eloy Jimenez and somebody like Vlad Guerrero Jr. are going to do the same thing right when they come up. It's a lot to ask of a player. So while I think Vlad Jr. is probably the most well-equipped to do this since his dad was on major league teams and he probably has ran around clubhouses his whole entire life, Prince Fielder might be a better comp to see, like, rookie year-wise what he did because he's, you know, was around a clubhouse his entire life with his dad and stuff. But in a nutshell, no, I can't take him in the top 50 because then you're really not – you have some upside if he potentially plays all year. But if he doesn't, if something goes wrong, then you are screwed out of a top five-round pick when you could have taken somebody easily safer, potentially an ace.
Prince Fielder in his rookie year, 2006, hit 28 home runs, stole 7 bases, hit 271, 347, 483.
I'll take it.
That's Prince Fielder stole 7 bases?
Yep.
Hey, Vlad's fast, too. Vlad can run.
For a big guy, yeah.
Yeah, for a big guy.
Yes,
kind of chunky.
Thank you for adding that caveat on. Yes, for a big guy, you can move. Yes, yes.
Yeah, Vlad's got some weight on him, for sure.
Oh, he does. He's got some ass.
All right, let's. I want to talk about. I've got 4 more guys on this list that'll round out the top 75, and then we'll wrap it up there. So we'll move a little bit quicker through these last 4 guys. One, I just want to talk about because I was really down on him. I think we all, for the most part, were really down on him when he came up. He started off really, really strong. Hasn't necessarily finished quite as strong, but still putting up a potential rookie of the year type season. 23 home runs, 276, 345, 484 for Gleyber Torres, going currently in the ADP as let's see, pick 61.8 in ADP, as early as the 48th pick off the board, as late as
Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck Anderson picking 48th. 78th is the lowest pick so far. So, Matt, where are you at on Gleyber Torres? Should he be going this early?
I still stand by it. No. What he did is he showed the hit tool was way more advanced than, you know, we had projections for. And I should say me, because I was down on him. I'm not taking Gleyber Torres that high. He doesn't offer the speed component. I think if he could play a full season, and I don't think he would. I think 23 home runs is about what I would project him at. I think he got out of the gate a little hot.
Super hot.
Yeah, he actually did. The play skills still don't blow you away. I understand he's 21, so they do in that context. But he's going to be in the major leagues again next year. There's a chance that he's not the everyday player at, well.
No, he's an everyday
player. He's going to be an everyday player at second base. Andujar is probably going to lose out to somebody at third. I think they get Machado.
I think they move Andujar over to first and Greg Bird loses out.
Yeah. Good. Sorry,
Bird. Yeah, Greg Bird is the word, but he's been terrible. But Torres for me. Luke Voigt's been good, but Gleyber Torres for me I'll always be the low man on Gleyber. I didn't see the skills translating this far, this well, and I don't see the speed component there. I hate this player too, but I'd much rather take Mondesi in this range.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Barf.
Yeah, I know, and that's I don't like Mondesi either, but at least Mondesi gives you the stolen base department when Torres does not.
All right, Mike, where are your thoughts on Torres?
Well, I kind of feel vindicated with him because after a month and a half of just shitting on this guy, he just kept on and hitting home runs in my face. And I don't know if you guys saw, every time he hit a home run, he would look into the camera and he would just like whisper, "Fuck you, Mike," and I just run around the bases. So after a couple months of that, he finally just started to tone it down a bit. So, you know, since July, he's hit 261 as opposed to 288 from April to June. And, you know, only 9 home runs in that time. 11% walk rate is nice, but, you know, 27% strikeout rate, below league average hard contact. When you look at his stats from StatCast, if you look at his underlying metrics from StatCast, nothing kind of jumps off the page to you. It kind of, you know, 266 expected batting average, which means that even with a little bit of improvement tournament next year, you're looking at a 275 batting average guy. Just the barrel percentage isn't great. Exit velocity is actually below league average. There's just nothing here that tells me he has an exceptional talent. With that said, he's going to be playing on in the Yankee lineup that is very, very good, and I expect him to, you know, get some runs and RBIs in there. But still, I think that he's more of a top 100, top 120 guy, and he's going to be taken very, very, very much higher than I'm willing to take him. So I'm going to say no.
Well, here's the only issue I take with what you said, Mike, because I think for the most part you were pretty spot on, and I agree with 99% of what you said. I have an issue with, you know, the fact that, you know, because he's on the Yankees, he's going to be getting a lot of runs and RBIs. He's going to hit at the bottom of this lineup. Like,
yeah.
Because this lineup is, he's already hitting ninth in this lineup. And this lineup is probably going to be better because, like Matt said, I think they're going to land Manny Machado next year, and they're probably going to add a couple other pieces. Like, this is a guy who's going to bat ninth most of the time. That's not going to lead to a lot of, you know, runs and RBIs necessarily. And I think he's like probably a 15 to 20 homer bat, a 260 average, a handful of stolen bases, and, you know, maybe like 70 runs, 70 RBIs. Like, that's not bad, but a guy going in the top 75, that's insane.
He's the epitome of boring is what I project him to be. Steady but boring.
Yes, he's going to be an above average contributor in probably the majority of categories outside of stolen bases. But, like, you can get that. Like, how much different is he than Marcus Semien?
No, not much. He finished 20th on the ESPN Player Rater at second base.
Turner.
Alone. Second base alone.
Well, Turner at least is going to hit for a premium average.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, like, Torres isn't going to hit 300. So, I think we're all in agreement that Torres is a little overrated.
I'll take Daniel Murphy over Torres.
He's way overrated.
So,
Torres.
Let's go talk about a guy who is being rated very highly, but I think at least Matt and I for sure are going to be okay with where he's being rated. So, Mike, I'll start with you because I don't really know where you stand on Walker Buehler, currently going as the pretty much 64th player off the board, 63.8 ADP, has gone as early as pick 48 and as late as pick 92. Mike, is this too high, or are you on kind of the hype train? Because it seems to be coming out of the station.
I am on board the fucking hype train with Walker Buehler. I am impressed every time I watch him pitch, and I think that he's going to be an absolute star. So, I mean, I'll make it quick for you. I'm absolutely on board, and just one awesome follow is Pitching Ninja at Pitching Ninja. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times I've watched probably 10 to 15 of his starts, but multiple times I've seen just kind of gifs of a few of Walker Buehler's spots in the strike zone. And he threads the needle. He just absolutely hits black and he's a stud. So not only does he have premium stuff, but his command is probably towards the upper echelon of the league. And he's just a rookie. So I can only imagine what he's going to do in year two. This is a much more polished product than somebody like Jose Berrios that came out in his, you know, first couple of seasons, or Blake Snell even after his first full season. This guy is ready, and I think that he's gonna end up being it when we're talking this time next year. I think he's gonna end up being somewhere in the top 15.
Matt, where are you at on Buehler?
Yeah, I'm all in. All in on strikeout or Buehler. He added a phenomenal cutter too, just as if he needed another pitch. He's got the big curveball, the four seam fastball with run, and now he's got a cutter that just is devastating pitch. He pitched against the Cardinals twice. You've seen the Jack Flaherty duels; they've both been fantastic going head to head. And Flaherty went 7 innings, 9 strikeouts in LA, and then in St. Louis he went 8 innings, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. Phenomenal stuff. This man is. The only thing holding them back is the Dodgers, and I mean that with, you know, how they manipulate the DL and all that stuff, which is good probably for his long-term health.
Especially considering his injury history.
Yes, he's had Tommy John, and, you know, he's a guy I think you're probably only going to get 160 innings next year at the best case, but that's fine. With where
I don't know.
Going,
I can see 170, 180.
Do you really? I don't know that they'll drop. Well, I mean, let's see how they use him in the
we're
playoffs.
Talking starts, so right, and that's another thing too. They're gonna go far in the playoffs, they're gonna have to rely on Buehler a lot. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they'll end up using him in a bullpen capacity, to be honest. And if one of their starters kind of gets into trouble at the beginning,
I don't think they can.
I don't think they can afford to use him. I think he's our number two
right now.
Yeah, but they still have enough pitching depth that they can use a varying degree of options, is what I'm saying. Like, if one of their starters gets into trouble early, they could bring Buehler in.
Maeda and Stripling and all that.
Although, at the same time, with Buehler being a rookie going into his first playoff scenario, it might be best to start him in a game. If he starts to unravel, then you bring in somebody else. You know, who knows what they'll do. But they have so many. I mean, they have Ryan Mattson in the bullpen, Jansen, Kenta Maeda, Scott Alexander, Sengra. I mean, like, they have a ton of guys. And they're probably going to roll with a four-person rotation. Yeah, so, and the Hyunjin Ryu's been pitching well in the second half. Rich Hill is kind of
rebounding Urias himself. Is back.
Yeah, Urias can be a lefty. I mean, they have a ton of lefties
as
well.
Urias is going to be on the playoff roster. Let's be
I think he will.
Really?
I don't think he can.
He's looked phenomenal since he came back. Yeah, he can. He's been on a 60-day DL. Anybody's, if you're in the organization, you're fine. But is it like a really bad – what kind of odds think I could get that Walker Buehler is dollar per dollar the most productive Dodger fantasy pitcher next year? You think that's a good bet? Starter, not closer.
I don't know who you would get to take that.
Kershaw. I think Buehler.
And Stripling's great.
I think Stripling dollar for dollar, because Stripling's going later, and I like Stripling almost as much.
I love Stripling as well.
So we'll get to Stripling next week when we continue on through these ADPs. Like I said, we're going through the top 75. I'm on board with you guys on Walker Buehler. I'm actually, to echo something I think it was Derek Van Riper said on the RotoWire podcast, I'm a little pissed he's going this high, because I was really...
Strikeout.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to, you know, having a ton of shares of Buehler, but I think the entire industry apparently is already on this hype train, so he actually may get priced out of where I'm willing to take him, considering there's going to be innings, probably innings issues with him. That being said, love the talent. I have him on a ton of dynasty leagues, and I'm going to enjoy the hell out of him next year, even though he pitches for the Dodgers, and I can't stand them. let's talk about Edwin Diaz real quick, because first closer coming off the board in these mocks, pick 69.2, going as early as 52nd and as late as 100. Last year we saw a number of closers going inside of the top 70. This year, he's the only one. So, Matt, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Edwin Diaz?
I think that's a good price. You're getting the strikeouts. He limits hits. He's 56. I mean, you can't project save number, but I'm pretty good with projecting anything over 35 for Diaz. So, as long as he stays healthy, I don't see any reason why he doesn't get that. There's really nobody challenging him in the Seattle bullpen, so he has the room to survive a few blowups. To keep it short, I don't see any reason why Diaz should not be the number one closer off the board. I'm fine with it.
Mike?
Kimbrough went in the top 45 last year, and he was like the lone upper echelon closer that didn't screw you in some capacity. And I think Diaz is better than Kimbrough. So, no, I don't have an issue with taking Diaz up there.
And not only that, I mean, it seemed like there were, for the most part, fairly settled situations at this time last year when we were talking about closers. That does not feel this way right now.
No, there's going to be a lot of
outside of Kimbrel and outside of Edwin Diaz. And Blake Treinen. I don't really trust a lot of closing situations. You know, who knows what Chapman's knee situation is going to be?
Kenley
Jansen's got a heart issue. I mean, right now, like, if in terms of like how safe I feel guys are, it's like you've got those three. Like Ken Giles is somehow safe in Toronto. You know, who knows what, you know, if there's going to be more legal issues around Roberto Osuna in Houston.
Oh, I took Jose Leclerc in the 14th round of the, you know, two early mocks, and I felt like kind of secure in that.
Yeah, and there you go. That's the problem.
I have Raisel Iglesias and Jordan Hicks, and I'm fine.
Yeah, Iglesias is one of those guys that I feel pretty safe about, but like they've tried to trade him, and if he gets traded, is he necessarily the closer?
No,
this will finally
an opener.
This will finally be the year they do the right thing, and I just want to finally draft them. They red should have traded Iglesias the last 4 years. But.
All right, let's finish out with probably the most polarizing and most overrated player, at least in my opinion, in these drafts. That's Alberto Mondesi, or Raul Mondesi Jr., however you want to call him.
Raul Adalberto, now he's just Adalberto.
Yes, he's currently going at an ADP of 70.5, as early as 39th overall, as late as 86. This is a guy that has pretty like a career like sub 300 on base percentage in the major leagues. Has really killed it in the second half this year, and I think people are starting to go a little bit insane. Mike, what are your thoughts on Mondesi?
Just to put it in perspective, on the Roto write-up, I wrote up Mondesi as a guy that was like 25% owned. This was like a couple weeks ago. And I said, he can really help your fantasy team in runs and stolen bases. And somebody like just straight went off on me in the comment section saying he's goddamn the worst hitter I've ever seen in my life. Don't pick
They're
him
not
up.
Wrong. They're not
and,
wrong.
And I was like, well, that's fair. And I feel the same way. He is just not a very good hitter. And I mean, yes, he's hitting 287 right now, but he cannot take a walk. And I'm trying to look up, you know, where he's usually hitting in lineups, because I believe it's ninth, but I could be wrong. And I just don't, the one thing that's going in his favor going into next year is that Kansas City just fucking loves to run. They love to run, and they're going to continue to let him run if he's in the lineup. And you know, he's actually been hitting second and ninth. That's the majority of where he's been hitting.
I just
say that. At the end of the day, you are baiting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the other thing he has to his benefit is Ned Yost, because Ned Yost don't give a shit about on-base percentage.
I could see him being gone, though, this year.
Yeah,
he could be. Yeah, you think about somebody like Whit Merrifield did this in the second half of 2017, I want to say, and just went off. Yeah, he went off for 13 home runs, a 293 average in the second half. And he's somebody that doesn't walk, but he makes premier contact, 85% contact rate in the second half of 2017. And then this year as a whole, he's, you know, obviously somebody that's put the bat to the ball still, but it has also upped his walk rate. Could Mondesi up his walk rate next year? Sure, I hope so, because right now it's 3%. I'm hoping he can up it to, like, you know, 4 or 5%.
I'm not counting on that though,
but I'm not either. Right now he's benefiting from a 350 BABIP, and, you know, speedier guys do have higher BABIPs. And I would hope that he can keep something of that nature moving forward as well. But he has to steal 40-plus bags to be able to recoup that value that you are spending on him. And I just don't think that he can do that. As of right now, I think that he's going to end up being – I think he's going to sit there, especially if he ends the year with 30 stolen bases and, like, 12 home runs. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of – you know, fantasy analysts out there, and you know who you are. They're going to be like, Adalberto Mondesi is going to win you your league, and this is why, and I just don't see it. He's going to come with a very, very, very bad batting average, and I just don't – I think that he's going to end up being a detriment in multiple categories. So, no, I'm not in for Mondesi.
Matt?
He is 100% the type of player that's going to win you your league or lose your league. There is no in-between. Zero. He's benefiting from, like you said, a massive 351 BABIP. He's had three partial seasons in the major leagues, 47-game stint in 2016, a 25-game stint last year, and then a 69-game stint so far this year. Contact rate, 64%, 58.5%, and this year is the high water mark at 72.5%. That is just – you can't – there's – the margin for error here is – you're already betting on house money. You've already won, and – you know, you better go to Vegas and shit, because if you bet on this guy again, you're going to lose everything. Where he's going is way too high. He is fantasy fool's gold. He's the type of guy that, oh, this is my buddy's first year playing fantasy baseball. We're going to get him in the league and make him pay money. Oh, look at this guy. He was really good. You make him take him, and then he fucking quits his league in May because he drafted Mondesi, and that's where you're going to be at. Dude is terrible. Worst hitter I've ever remember. In the prospect days when he was banging on the door, I'm so glad he's not eligible for those lists anymore. He had the weird distinction of making his major league debut in the World Series because he's already on the 40-man, and should have known his career would be weird as hell since then, because it is. And it is. I want no part of this. It's the ultimate Russian roulette, but there's only one empty chamber, so I'll pass.
Oh my god, that's really funny. Okay, so of players, and obviously Mondesi he does not have 450 plate appearances because he has only played 69 games in the majors this year, But
oh, by the way, look at his AAA stat line this year. Not even good. His AAA line is not even good.
Yeah.
250, 95, 492. Like, that's not even good.
Of players who had at least 450 plate appearances, would, like I said, which he does not, he has the fourth lowest, or he would have the fourth lowest contact percentage of all of those players, right next to Joey Gallo and Teoscar Hernandez.
Like, probably Chris Davis too, right?
Both Chris Davises are down there. Giancarlo Stanton down there as well. Javier Baez down there as well. Like, this is Yoan Moncada and Matt Davidson and Matt
coming full circle.
Beagle. So like, this is not necessarily a great place for him to be on that list, especially for a guy who does not walk at all. A 3% walk rate in the majors this year, which is down 2 percentage points from his stint last year in the majors, and down 3 percentage points from where he was in AAA. He had a 6% walk rate in AAA. This is a guy with huge swing and miss in his game, and no patience to kind of make up for it. Like, this is going to end really, really poorly. You know, best case scenario, he is Jose Peraza, which was pretty good player this year. But you can get Jose Peraza 20 picks later.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bondesi in 2017 in AAA had a 305 average with a 373 BABIP. That's the only BABIP that I see that's kind of like an outlier. The rest are somewhere in the vicinity of, like, you know, 290, 260, 320, something like that. But, I mean, he stole 21 bases and hit 13 home runs last year. And then this year, AAA had 10 stolen bases, 5 home runs in 29 games, 133 plate appearances. I'm just wondering the risk factor of me shitting on him this whole time. And despite hitting 270 with, like, a negative on base percentage, he ends up with like 14 home runs and 31 stolen bases next year. And then that's kind of a losing argument for us.
Yeah, but if you're dead set on getting a player like Mondesi, just draft Starling Marte.
Yeah,
yeah.
You get the upside.
No, I agree.
Like, if Starling Marte hadn't gotten hurt yesterday, and which will probably prematurely end his season, he was one home run away from a 2030 season.
Right. Just draft him. Pay up for Marte. Don't waste your time with Adalberto.
I agree.
I mean, and like Mike said, like, this could obviously, like, he could steal 40 bases. No one's going to be surprised if he steals 40 bases.
He still might.
Yes. You know, I mean, if he steals, you know, no one's going to be surprised if he does get 40 stolen bases next season, but no one's going to be surprised either if by June 1st he's in the minor leagues.
Or released.
Yes.
Take Billy Hamilton's floor and then dig 20 feet down.
Without the defense.
Yeah, and dig 20 feet down, and then you got to dig 20 more.
Because at least Billy Hamilton is a gold glove center fielder. That's what keeps him in the lineup on a regular basis. Mondesi is not a gold glove second baseman.
Or shortstop next year. I think he might be a short.
Yeah, the potential. All right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. We will cover more of these mock draft ADPs, early mock ADPs, next week when we get together. And we'll have some other podcasts hopefully coming out this week as well, and throughout the entire offseason. We'll be getting at least one podcast a week out. I apologize that we haven't had as many recently. Had some serious health issues that popped up. That unfortunately kind of derailed me the last couple weeks, but seemingly over them, and we should be able to get back on our regular schedule. Matt, plug all your work, everything you're doing for us, everything you're doing for Prospects Live, and remind people where they can reach you on social media.
Sure, MD Top FWFB. We did our Arizona Fall League preview over there at Prospects Live. Wrote up all six little teams there. Did a couple podcasts. Got another podcast in the hopper that I just recorded with the two Jasons. They got their live books in the field. We go over dynasty value of recent J2 guys and other guys in the low levels of the minor leagues, like Lolo Sanchez and what the fuck's his name? Diaz from Boston. I can't remember his first name. And Tony Flores and guys like that. So check that out. We're doing good things over there. It's been a lot of good positive feedback since launch. The website looks amazing. So I'm really happy with all that. obviously this podcast here, I'm going to drop my updated prospect list rankings on FWFB in the next couple of days. I'm just trying to get it formatted. And then for the, we have more Arizona Fall League content. Ralph and I are dropping the top offensive prospect list for the Arizona Fall League, ranking everybody on each six, all six teams. And I think Vladimir Guerrero is number one, if you were wondering. Yeah, other than that, FWFB and Prospects Live is where you can find me.
Mike, where can people find you?
At Mike Warner FWFB. I just published my last daily matchups column for Baseball HQ this season. Not forever. I know you guys were like, oh, wait, is it forever? Finally. But no, just this season. And we're going to be finishing up the Roto write-up this week and heading into the off season. So it's been a long, awesome season. But I'm ready for the playoffs. And I, just a pop culture reference, if, have you guys seen Shape of Water? Have you watched this movie? Well, while I understand, I think it won Best Picture at the Oscars, I want you guys to talk to me whenever. If you guys have watched Shape of Water, you out there in the podcast lands, just like tweet at me because I have some thoughts.
And yeah, I will not be tweeting at you because I have no.
I want to do a little humble brag real quick. I did win my home league for Fantasy League, so I got a cool $1,200 headed my way.
Congrats to you. I'm done with head-to-head officially because I, for the third year in a row, had the best record and lost in the semis, and I'm fucking done.
This is the league I won last year by one strikeout on the last day. This time it wasn't as stressful. I cruised to a head-to-head win. Back-to-back champions in a head-to-head league. So
yeah, I'm going to walk away with one championship in 17 leagues. And unfortunately, it was not in Tout Wars head-to-head where I stand by the strategy, and I know I got a lot of heat for the strategy. I actually stand by it, and I'm going to write an article over on FanGraphs on it because I think this is one of those key examples of process rather than results.
Yes.
Yep.
Because
right.
I think the process was right. The results didn't turn out well.
Just
because
got injuries, man.
Yeah, I got crushed with injuries on that team, and yet still finished. I mean, they're going to finish in fourth or fifth. I had the most points scored against me by far, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow.
And somehow I still manage a, fourth, fifth place finish. But it was not necessarily a great year in terms of the amount of leagues I've won. I'm going to definitely pare down the amount of leagues I'm in. But
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
I do not believe you.
I've already dropped out of one, so I'm already down to 16 for next year.
Ooh, but then you're going to pick up one. So.
No, I'm definitely not going to pick up one. I'm definitely going to drop out of a number of other ones. But I think the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational in general was a success. Yes. It looks like Clay Link
awesome
is
event.
Going to win that, and he's a great dude. I'll have him on
That's
the podcast.
That's going to be a hell of a thing to put on your trophy case. So you won with all these smart people and then me in this league. So it's to win that is a hell of an achievement.
It is.
So
it
congratulations
is.
To Clay.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great dude in the industry, yes. Along with being a just a great analyst as well. So. He well deserves that. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. I'm still writing for FanGraphs. I'll be writing there all off season. Still writing in Fantasy Alarm, though my attention over there has switched to football through the rest of the year. But we'll be picking up baseball back at the beginning of next season. And no longer on Fantasy Sports Radio, but you can hear me on all these podcasts. For football and baseball, because I'll be...
It's almost time for the prospect minutes, too, Justin.
Yes. Yes, it is. The prospect minutes are coming back, and we're going to have the draft guide, which will be improved this year, come out earlier, and all the off-season content for those who weren't around for the preseason content that we deliver. I think we do more podcasts than probably anybody else.
It's the best time of year, too. I love it.
At Friends of Fantasy Benefits. I think we did at least two a day for the first 30 days, and then at least, four or five a week through the end of March.
Positional breakdowns, organization breakdowns, minor league system breakdowns, everything you can imagine. Yeah. We have
literally every player ever in the history of baseball.
We're also one of the few podcasts that go throughout the off season as well, so expect to get at least a podcast a week through the end of the season, minus, probably a week off for Thanksgiving, week off for Christmas. But even then, we might even release them. But we'll be
getting
together.
I'm getting married in October, so I'll have a week off in October for me as well.
Well, but Mike and I can handle that week. So,
oh, yeah.
Congratulations.
We'll be all right.
That's going to wrap us up for for this episode. For Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have fantastic baseball season.